Hi, my name is Robert Rogers. I am 55 years old, and today is, what is today's date? It's July 2nd, and I'm speaking with Susan Anderson, who is my friend. Susan Sanderson. We are recording in Sarasota, Florida. So Susan, as we celebrate Stonewall's 50th anniversary, what is it that you would like to share for the archive?
Well, I don't remember anything about Stonewall in 1969 because I was a kid in New Jersey. I was 11. I remember, you know, us landing on the moon. I remember Woodstock, but somehow Stonewall never made it into our little suburban house. So, I guess, you know, mostly what I wanted to talk about was kind of what it was like back then, like in New Jersey, but also in the village in New York. And I think just how it felt so different then, like for better and for worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people were generally not out, right? We didn't have like celebrities who were out. I mean, we had maybe, you know, Martina Navratilova or Billie Jean King, you know, but they were few and far between. So you didn't have, I mean, I don't know when K.D. Lang came along.
Oh, right.
So you didn't feel like it was okay that, you know, you could do this, that, or the other thing if you came out as gay. You know, mm-hmm. You were kind of quiet about it. And so in the early 80s, I guess when I was in college, not quite finished, somebody I went to college with told me about this gay bar that was about 45 minutes from my house in New Jersey called The Chalet. So, and you know, it got an amazing crowd. And there were actually two bars. One was a lot dumpier. That one was nicer. So I started going there and, you know, met people through that.
It was a mixed?
Men and women.
Okay.
And, but there was also this sense, it was on a lake, kind of a bit of a resort community, middle class. There was also the sense that we weren't entirely sure that our cars were safe in the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that parking lot was just for that bar,
mm-hmm.
you know, there was always the sense, well, you know, some people might come by and smash a few windows. We don't know.
It's like vandalize the cars.
Yeah. So after that, I guess I met my like lifelong partner, Marie, who worked in New York and then was going to go to graduate school in New York. And so rented an apartment on Grove Street, which was like a block from Christopher Street. And this was, I was trying to think, it was 80 or 81. And that was really interesting because, you know, there were tons of gay men. I mean, it was hard to get a sense of the lesbians,
mm-hmm.
you know, but you'd see gay men on Christopher Street or at the piers there all the time. But it wasn't, I mean, nobody was comfortable kind of holding hands, even though you were in this little gay
sort of
bubble
enclave.
Or mecca,
yeah.
you know. Certainly, I think people felt freer than they did in the suburbs or wherever, but still, it was kind of limited. I mean, and there were bars, you know, there were men's bars, there were the women's bars, and I remember going to this women's bar on, I guess it was 7th Avenue then, I think it was 7th Avenue and Grove, called the Duchess. Long gone, you know, but you'd go in and there'd be this big guy, like a bouncer at the door, you know, and you'd have to get past him to get in. But, you know, it was like once you were in there, he was like the gatekeeper, but he also kept the people in there safe. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like he wasn't going to let in any riffraff or anybody that really didn't look like they were there for positive means, you know.
Right.
I don't know if they were still like raiding the bars then. I don't know if that stopped right after Stonewall. I mean, I was never in a bar that was raided.
Mm-hmm.
Did
anybody ever talk about that? Like, I mean, was anybody afraid of that happening? Was it ever referenced?
Yeah, people were nervous.
Yeah.
People were nervous.
Going in and coming out, probably,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yes, because, yeah. You know, you're going in, but, you know, coming out, you don't know who's outside leaning against the next building. You know, I'm sure people knew what it was, and so if anybody wanted to do harm, you know, they had an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was a bit nervous, but I think overwhelmingly people wanted to go in because it was like a place you knew you'd find, you know, your kin, your family.
Yeah,
and
right.
I mean, how many places were there like that in those days? And it just was like so hush-hush kind of that it was like an oasis. I mean, you went in and you could be yourself,
yeah.
And you found people like you. You thought, okay, I'm not the only one. And it was really a powerful thing. So people went in, even though there was some kind of risk involved, you know? And then I guess right around then also, I got involved. There was actually a gay group in Morris County, New Jersey, that met every Monday at the Unitarian Church, men and women, and it was big. I mean, there were, on any average Monday, there were like between 200 and 300 people.
Oh my God.
I mean, it was amazing. And I forget when it was started, but, you know, they'd have a program, well, they'd have groups, discussion groups who would break off, then they'd have like a main program,
uh-huh.
which, you know, sometime was entertainment, sometime was educational. So I got involved in that, and then, you know, but I mean, I remember because I was on the board briefly a couple of years, and I forget what we were fighting for then, like politically in New Jersey, but I don't think any one of us, you know, would have ever said in our lifetime we were going to see marriage.
Oh, yeah, marriage equality.
You know,
yeah,
I
amazing.
Just, you know, we would have been, you know, so blown away to think that was going to be possible because,
yeah.
I mean, I forget what we were fighting for, but it was such an uphill battle,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I guess what was different then, though, I mean, okay, so we had, you know, if you were just kind of out in public or whatever, you know, you were kind of in the closet a bit, right? You were nervous. I mean, I was always, you know, having a hard time because, you know, I would kind of dress in this casual style that was like really neither male nor female.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my hair was relatively short and I was always getting called sir. You know, and I, you know, if I went in a public bathroom and went in the women's room, you know, I had people say to me, you know, sir, the men's room is around the corner,
oh, wow.
you know, pleasant. I mean, they weren't going
right.
to harm me.
Right.
But, you know, so you thought, well, I don't know. Is that,
interesting.
You know, you kind of feel like,
gender
yeah.
issue. Yeah.
You know, and at gas stations, I mean, New Jersey was a state where then you couldn't pump your own gas. And it was always like, you know, how much you want, sir, or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I just wasn't really confident enough to say, hey, what do you mean, sir? You know,
right,
I'm
right,
a woman,
right.
You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
I don't know if it just wasn't that common, but, you know, that happened a whole lot. And so when we had these places, whether it was a bar or this group on Monday night where we came together, there was a lot of community, you know,
mm-hmm.
there was a lot of, you know, even though there were great differences among us within that group, it was like there was something that really bound us all together.
So did you have allies there as well? I mean, was it, you know, what sort of representation was there? I mean, did you have transgender people?
Yeah. We did. And, you know, I remember even then, you know, we would have I forget what it was called, but, you know, they'd have a show where the drag queens, you know, would dress up and sing, and we all loved it, and they were gorgeous, you
mm-hmm.
know, but there were also tales, you know, kind of every other month of one of them being harassed or beaten, you know, and it was just incredibly sad. But I think it brought us together and we were like, God, we've got to watch out for each
mm-hmm.
other because
mm-hmm.
not only is no one else doing it, but there's people out there who would want to do us harm, you know, so so we looked out for
stick together and watch out for each other, right?
And so there was already that kind of bond. And then, you know, it was like early to mid 80s when like AIDS started becoming an issue. You know, that was another thing that kind of brought us all together, because, you know, I mean, there was horrible, you know, everybody who's lived through it knows how horrible it was.
Mm-hmm.
So that brought everybody together. It's like, you know, what the hell is going on? And what can we do? And then there was the stigma from the larger society, you know, what is this gay men's disease? And, you know, well, if they weren't doing that, they wouldn't get this, all that horrible stuff.
And you remember, you and I were present at a conversation, weren't you here for one of our discussion groups where somebody brought up the fact that that the lesbian community really stepped up and provided, became caregivers.
Right,
And support systems, just like a network of support for the gay men.
Right.
Who were HIV positive and diagnosed with AIDS.
You know, but it was so, horrible in the beginning because people didn't know. I mean, people didn't know they were at risk. They didn't know how to protect themselves. Yeah. There was all of that. So people were just, you know, and the women were largely, you know, immune from it at that point. And, you know, it was just people were falling by the wayside, you know? And,
lots of people disappearing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And so I think, you know, by... Well, that was kind of the 80s, and then, you know, I kind of drifted away from that group as I got more involved with Marie, and we were like a couple, and so, I don't know, I just kind of didn't go as much, and then, you know, ended up relocating to Boston and Vermont, so that took me away from the group I had been part of. You know, but, you know, thinking about how it is now, I mean, I don't know. So, okay, I'm here in Sarasota and Venice. I just don't feel like there's that kind of community. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know there's other gay people here, but do we not have that? I can't quite get my head around it. Do we not have that feeling of community and need or desire to be around each other because we're not, you know, we're not such a subculture, or we're not the outcasts we were then. We certainly have more rights, but I feel like almost as we've become more accepted and more part of the mainstream culture, we've also kind of lost something because we don't, I don't know, it seems like we don't feel this need to connect and share our experience, you know. And I thought about it even in terms of, you know, people being like told they have to learn English when they come to this country, or you know, drop their customs and their language, you know, if you want to be here you got to be part of the big you know, melting pot, but you've got to learn English and be like us. And it's sort of like, in a sense, like, what did we hope for back then? I mean, I'm sure it was equality, you know, on all levels, right? Discrimination and housing, jobs, marriage, and all of that.
Well, you know, I wonder if it has something to do with, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, you know, we are older adults.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a community of older adults.
Right.
You know, most of us are from a pre-Stonewall era, who really did experience consistent discrimination, violence. And I wonder, I wonder, you know, that sort of trauma is really difficult to, that's a difficult threshold to cross. I mean, and I think maybe the cumulative effect of having gone through that sort of discrimination and experiencing that level of hatred, you know, we carry that with us for the rest of our lives, I think. And maybe it's difficult. You know, we tend to be insular, you know? I mean, we find our
right,
tribe.
Right.
We hang tight.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe that makes it difficult for us to sort of integrate into the larger community somehow. Because, yes, Sarasota is definitely, it's hard to navigate as a member of the LGBT community, because it's hard to find people.
Right. Right.
And you end up with that sense of isolation and, you know, experiencing that loneliness.
Right. I mean, I can't really say, I mean, if St. Petersburg is a whole lot different. I mean, I just chuckled when I saw they were rated like the second or third most gay friendly city, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, what? you know, but what little I know about St. Pete is, you know, like if I'm bored on a Saturday or Sunday or even a weeknight, you know, there's an area I can go to where there's shops, restaurants, and bars that are either gay-owned or very gay-friendly.
Yeah.
And I don't have to sit in my house because I don't know where to go in Sarasota to find that.
Yeah.
So it at least offers that, but...
Well, I'm curious, so you mentioned earlier, all the positive aspects of this post-Stonewall world that we live in, but then you also reference some, what you think are potentially some negative aspects, some things that may have been lost in that.
I think, well, certainly a feeling of we've got each other's backs, that we share something in common that, you know, the larger society looks down on or has no use for. And, you know, we were vulnerable because of that, but there was a feeling of looking out for one another that I guess brought us together also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there were, I don't know, what was it, in the 90s, the Matthew Shepard thing? I mean, there were just horrible things that would happen that we'd hear about. And I think it did bridge a gap. I mean, where we would have had differences with somebody, we had a common enemy in a way, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we also had a kind of common feeling of, hey, I've got your back, you've got my back, because we felt oppressed, really, as a community. So
like in light of these threatening environment or however you want to put it, that we came together to protect one another, sort of lost that through this liberation in a sense from those things.
Yeah,
and
I think
or perceived liberation from those things.
Yeah, I guess I feel like some of it was a perceived change when marriage equality happened, right? It's
mm-hmm.
like, okay, now, I mean, it's almost like now we're just like them, but we're really not, but we kind of feel like we are because we now have this right that we never had,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that that's not all for the good. I mean, certainly, you know, marriage and social security and medical issues, you know, with a partner or spouse are, you know, 200% better than they were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it just feels like we're more scattered and separate now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's because we don't have the need anymore to have each other's backs and protect ourselves from the larger society, although now we're kind of in a time where I think maybe we should be thinking about that again.
It does feel that way, that's
for
sure.
Because, you know, the norm and the sort of license and permission given to hate
uh-huh.
groups in this country is now
uh-huh.
a scary thing again.
And have you noticed, I mean, do you think that that's sort of galvanizing the community again?
I think it's beginning to.
Uh-huh.
I think it is beginning to. You know, I don't know how it is for younger people, but I think for people my age, I mean, yeah, it starts to remind us of what it was like back then.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, also, I think it's different down here than I ever, well, certainly in Vermont, you know, it was like, it was okay, whatever, you know, because there was a feeling you could just be who you were and you'd be accepted. And also,
right.
People were kind of private and didn't care what you did behind your pine trees, right?
Right,
and,
right.
You know, whatever, live and let live.
Yeah.
Which was great, but, you know, down here, I don't quite feel that. I mean, I went to a forum that some churches put on what it was like to be a black person in Venice.
Mm-hmm.
It's really curious, because I know, like, there's a neighborhood of black people, and I know where it is, but they're not really mixed in with white people at all.
Mm-hmm.
So a woman came from a black church in that neighborhood, you know, that had been there forever, and talked about her experience, and then a black guy who recently, I guess, became head of the Venice Theater.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, he was talking about it and how, you know, he was working late one night and was walking from the theater over to Main Street to a restaurant, you know, which is like just a block, not far.
Right.
You know, and some pickup truck went by and people hollered something about, you know, go home, fag, we don't want you in this town. Right. And it's yeah. So, you know, when I don't really feel like this part of Florida is the South per se,
mm-hmm.
but I also don't feel like it's Vermont or New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not that that couldn't happen in those places too, but I guess, you know, I'm a little more wary down here because, like, especially in Venice, I mean, I'm in a town that voted for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And there's Trump bumper stickers, and, you know, you just feel like,
mm-hmm.
well, I wonder what they think of me.
Like, do you feel unsafe there sometimes?
Not really.
Be hateful and hurtful, or?
I think it's possible, but I don't really feel it on a daily basis because I'm kind of in a community of older folks, and I'm not out late at night, you know,
yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, not really, I don't, but I was shocked to hear him say that, and I don't know how much of it was that he was black, that he was gay, you know, but I was like, wow.
So, you know, you're talking about Vermont, that reminded me of something kind of interesting. When I was living in Virginia, in Southwest Virginia, and it was, you know, rural
Ooh.
Virginia, you know, and beautiful, and there were, you know, there were definitely, you know, I had friends who are LGBTQ.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because, but, like, when I wanted to go out into the rural communities, there was,
mm-hmm.
There was a town not far from where I lived. And they had a music festival. It was a really cool little place. And there was a large community of lesbians that lived there. And, you know, when I, or any of the, you know, when the guys wanted to
mm-hmm.
leave Roanoke and go out into the country and enjoy this bluegrass music and hang
yeah.
out, it was interesting because the first time I said, you know, so we're going to come out and hang out with you guys, you know, the first time
mm-hmm.
we're going to hear the bluegrass, and the girls were like, so here's what we're gonna need to do, you know, let us kind of introduce you to the community, and I was like, well, I don't understand. Sure, okay, that works. And they were, you know where I'm going with
this? Yeah, I do.
And
I lived through it, yeah.
And they were just like, so, you know, the folks here are much more accepting of two women being together than two men. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And they were like, it's, for whatever reason, it's much easier for us to, you know, to be here.
Mm-hmm.
We were integrated into the community and accepted into the community than for you guys.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? I mean, of course there was an explanation, but it was odd anyway,
yeah.
the conversation, but we had a great night, but I understood by the time it was over that had they not sort of introduced mm-hmm. us to these folks, that we may not have been very welcome
right.
at all.
Right. Well, yeah, I think it's true that, you know, women, I mean, you know, I didn't do it, but, you know, women could probably have put their arms around each other walking down a street and not necessarily gotten hassled because, you know, in society in general, you know, straight women can be close friends mm-hmm. and touch each other walking mm-hmm. down the street, put their arm
they
around each other.
They can show affection.
They can show affection for each other without, you know, a big problem.
Yeah.
Well, men can't. You know, men just can't. I mean, if you saw two men doing that.
It's a cultural thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's just, you know, so I think women, you know, women were, by and large, I think, more able to pass. And, you know, because there were always tales of, well, you know, she's a librarian, just lives alone with her cat, or, you know, there was the old thing about the Boston marriage, you know, like two old academic women living together, you know, but nobody thought anything of it, you know.
I'd never heard that before.
Right, but they could get away with it, you know.
So people, I mean, but people knew, but it just wasn't,
right. It wasn't talked about, but, you know.
But it was accepted on some level.
There's, I mean, you got to believe even today there's much less tolerance of men showing any physical affection in public, you know. I mean, it's fine, like, if you're on a sports team, you can hug some, you know.
Yeah.
You see it in football and baseball, but anything else, it's like, it's not. And I also, there's just a lot less tolerance for men, especially, you know, any male who deviates from what the larger culture thinks is masculine, right?
Well, I guess it's, you know, the one of the guys that I was talking to, I'll never forget it. You know, this big, masculine, mm-hmm. Farmer dude that was super cool guy, you know, and he was just saying, like, man, you know, that is a threat to masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's how it's perceived, and it's just super uncomfortable, you know, not for me. I mean, he was totally cool with it. He was like, whatever, not into it, but whatever floats out, right?
Yeah.
But he, you know, his buddies, he was like, you know, had you not come in
mm-hmm.
with, you know, with our lesbian friends, this could have been, you know, an uncomfortable evening for you.
Yeah.
And your friends.
Yeah.
You know, it was interesting that he said that it was perceived as it was a threat.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right. And I don't even know how different, I don't think that's much different today, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, this wasn't even that long ago. That's
the
crazy
thing.
This is like 5 years ago or whatever.
Right.
So
well,
it's like, but I still think it's that way. I mean, it's definitely that way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely not tolerated, and women, you know, women can just, I guess, you know, get away with it more because women in general are, you know, more emotional. You know, the society perceives them as more emotional.
Mm-hmm.
They can hug their friends, other women, it's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas men, it's like, not. You guys can shake hands, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but, you know, even back in the 80s in the village, you know, the men, even on Christopher Street, you know, which would be out on a Saturday night, it's like 80-90% gay men,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't hold hands. I mean, it was like not, you know, even in that environment, it really, you just didn't feel free to do it,
huh.
You know? You know, of course, it was a big city, and, you know, anybody could have been coming down the street or whatever, but I don't know. I mean, I don't feel like there was the hatred toward people that there seems to be today, you know.
Interesting.
Of
so that's
groups.
A new, right.
I mean, we always were afraid, but I tell you, I mean, I don't remember a lot of violence or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was some, but it's almost like, wow, like now between guns and,
yeah,
and, you know, dividing up the country so much into tribes, it's like, I don't know. I mean, I haven't felt it yet, but who knows? Maybe,
yeah,
maybe there will be some backlash. And
well, like a lot of conversations I have, it's really interesting. More often than not, I mean, people are actually referencing a migration of some sort, you
mm-hmm.
know. Recently, friends decided to move to California.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, they moved to Southern California.
Yeah, yeah. I think there may be...
Northwest.
Well, but there may be a migration of people to places where they know there's more gays and
yeah.
it's more accepting.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
You know, rather than, you know, trying to live in an area you're just not sure about or,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't know. I mean, I find as I'm older, I don't exactly know why, but I mean, I'm looking for other people similar to me to be around and share my story because, you know,
that's what we do, right?
And you know, on some level I get it, you know, whether we're straight, gay, whatever, we're all humans and most of what we experience is the same.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, you know, I'm in a neighborhood and where there's other people my age, you know, they even if they've lost their spouse, I mean, they've got grandchildren and they're obsessed with their grandchildren,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, for a lot of us, that wasn't possible either, right?
Back,
that was very different, adoption laws and so on, but, so I think it is harder. I mean, I feel like, well, you know, yeah, I don't have grandchildren to talk about. And so, you know, when they bring out the pictures and, you know, it's like,
yeah.
Well, I'm not really into talking about that at length, you know? It's
well, and I guess we also, if you think about it, I mean, older adults in the LGBT community, I mean, we often talk about what the future looks like for us.
Mm-hmm.
With, you know, those of us who have, whose families have rejected us,
right.
We have no kids, and, you know, it's, and there are stories of people transitioning into assisted living
mm-hmm.
facilities, who have been able to express their love with for one another freely,
yeah,
that are going into ALFs and having to go back into the closet and in many cases,
yeah.
like, live in separate, you know, move in
yeah,
separately,
right,
go to the
right.
same place, but move
pay,
in separately.
Pay two separate entry
yeah.
fees,
yeah.
you know, which...
Get two separate spaces and
yeah.
Begin again to meet clandestinely.
Yeah.
At the end of their lives.
Yeah, that's horrible.
After
yeah.
loving each other
right.
openly for so long and being
right.
together, at the end of their lives
yeah.
having to separate from one another.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, there's, I mean... I think it's coming up as an issue more now because
yeah.
here we are, the boomers.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of us, right?
Yeah.
And we're thinking about that. And, you know, I mean, I think even of my mother, I mean, if she didn't have me to look after her, she'd be in one of those places,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But for those of us who don't have, you know, siblings or children who are going to look after us or
yeah.
lost our partner, what do?
We have to take care of each other.
Yeah, and if we don't know where to find each other, how do we do that? So,
right.
you know, I've been...
It's hard to build community, create community.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's not... It's possible, but I think also the aging, you know, getting older, I mean, it seems like it becomes a little more challenging to cultivate those...
yeah.
That level of friendship, that depth of friendship.
Right, right.
And
I mean,
to trust, you know, build a relationship
yeah.
that you can...
And that's where I think some of these, you know, communities, I mean, whether it's like Fort Lauderdale or Palm Springs, you know,
yeah.
where there's
New
a
York,
lot of...
Right? Just
yeah,
opening.
A lot of older gays, I mean, and places are starting to build, you know, facilities...
Mm-hmm. For us.
For us, right?
Yeah.
To be together as we age.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know that it'll ever happen in a town, city, whatever you want to call Sarasota, mm-hmm. of its size, but maybe in St. Pete. I mean, I think it's, well, it's also because we're like the generation that went through, you know, the whole time period of not having rights and of being a, you know, a subculture. So, you know, it's like, maybe we don't want to just go into assisted living with a bunch of straight people and go back into the closet. We'd rather be with each other, you know, and share our stories and support each other. I mean,
like what we're doing right now.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the reason I think this project is so incredible. You know, that it's also the first comprehensive effort, right?
Right.
To document our stories,
right,
and I it's, you know, to bring humanity to the experience, because I think it's interesting that oftentimes I think we're looked at as I don't know, you know, that we don't belong, that we have nothing to contribute,
mm-hmm.
And you know, that we remain on the fringe and disconnected and it doesn't matter.
Right.
But to
right.
be given this opportunity, even talking about it and having somebody listen and care.
Yeah.
And makes it feel like we matter.
And I think it reminds us that if we want a different, if we want a different way to age in community, you know, we're going to have to be the ones to do it, just like, mm-hmm. you know, they were the ones at Stonewall and, mm-hmm. you know, and the ones that fought for marriage equality. I mean, we're going to have to come together in some mm-hmm. way and work on that. Because
well, yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, we definitely, we have to unite, mm-hmm. right?
Continue. First, we have to find
fight.
Each other.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and then,
yeah.
you know, we have to tell our stories, you
yeah.
know, and then we can see, you know, we can learn from each other and, you know, get some kind of a bond going. But it's kind of, you know, it's tough. It's tough in this.
It's harder than I thought.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, if you think about, again, you know, what you and I are doing right now, what, how we met, you
mm-hmm.
know, through
mm-hmm.
through the formation of this of the group that we
right.
attend.
Right.
The great thing is to know that it's possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know that, and it takes a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like stories always enlighten. You know, we get to know each other, and I guess, again, I keep talking about humanity, but it really, highlights the humanity in the experience.
Yeah, and there's just not enough value, time, focus
mm-hmm.
on us just getting together and talking and getting to know each other and not looking
That's
at
true.
Our phones or our TVs or whatever,
That's
right?
True.
I mean,
yeah.
where's the value on, like, connecting with another person at
yeah.
a deeper level? And we've found it in the group.
Yeah.
And it also gives me hope, you know, because of the kind of people I've met there,
yeah.
you know, and how wonderful they are. Haven't figured out, you know, how to do that outside the group,
yeah.
you know, when I go out these doors, but it certainly does give you hope, and you know, you have people who listen and support,
yeah.
and
that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and I often think, you know, well, I don't have alcohol problems, but I wish we had something like AA, where, you know, on any given day you could just drop
oh, yeah.
in and connect with others who share, you know, something so important with you, but
yeah.
but we don't.
Because it's, yeah, it's, you know, it's hard to, I mean, we're sentient, right?
Yeah.
And feelings, you know, feelings surface, and it's really important to know that you can talk about them at that very moment. And having to schedule that time sometimes is pretty challenging.
Right.
Like
right.
Knowing that at any moment you can reach out to somebody really makes a difference.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think definitely. Yes. You know, because if that happens now, you know, I kind of wait till Tuesday, you know.
Right.
And then, you know, okay, I can talk about
circled
this
on
Tuesday.
The calendar.
Right, right.
Keep a list of questions or feelings,
right,
or
right.
You know, whatever.
But it's like if it's another day, I don't know, where do you go with it?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, maybe, you know, if you're getting old and you're alone and you don't like it, maybe you do have to migrate somewhere that, you know, it's kind of more obvious where people gather. And if you don't want to be alone on a Sunday afternoon, you know where you can go hang out.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's really cool. You know, but for now, you know, if you just sort of... it also seems really important to kind of just be like in this moment, you know, and we're sitting here, and talking and caring about each other and understanding one another. And,
And that's what it's all about. Right. And, I think, you know, the opportunity to do that in today's society is like gone down the tubes.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it just seems like it, again, it's back to everything has to be, I don't know. I mean, I know that we scheduled this, but...
Yeah, I know, but we're all, you know, busy and time this and that, but then you come down to what's really important.
And this matters.
Yeah.
This, I guess, like, you know, fills your heart and soul in a way that nothing else can.
Right.
So...
Right. It's valuable above all else, right? That's it. You know, it's what's important. It's what matters in the end.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, I don't know. I think maybe those moments, you know, when you're transitioning out of this life, that I would imagine that this is what you reflect on.
Right.
That this is what you will, you know, hopefully the thoughts that fill your head are those of love and friendship.
Absolutely.
That's what I imagine is probably the case, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, thanks for
wonderful.
Yeah, thanks for
thank you.
Thanks for being my friend.
Oh, thank you. Hey, I told you you're the brother that I always wish I had.
So let's see.
And may he listen to it one day on StoryCorps. Right?
I hope that, so. Let's see. You will not be able to resume this interview. I think.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah.
Are you sure you're finished?
Yeah, we're finished.